The views expressed in this podcast are solely our own. This information is provided for your convenience. It does not constitute legal advice, nor does it create an attorney-client relationship. Prior results do not guarantee similar outcomes. This is attorney advertising.
Enjoy.
Welcome to Red Flags Rising. My name is Mike Cunningham. I'm a partner in the International Trade and National Security Practice at Morgan Lewis. Today is Wednesday, October 15th, just after 5 p.m. Pacific time. Brent, where are we and how are we doing today?
We're coming at you today from the San Jose field office. No, not that field office, the other one. We just came from the Women in Trade of Northern California and Professional Association of Exporters and Importers Conference here in San Jose.
Also put on by TTRA, another business organization out here in the Bay Area. I flew out west for this. It's a great event and highly recommend it to anyone who's interested in really getting to know people in the community. It was good to be back.
It's a good group of people, a lot of interesting thoughts shared among the room. We're here to talk a little bit about things that we've been noticing out there in the export controls world that may be helpful and practical for people to think about as we're in these changing times.
Absolutely, Brent. There was a ton of discussion today at the conference about the affiliates rule. We'd recommend people to look back at episodes 28 and 29 of our podcast. Episode 28 is almost an emergency podcast, if you will, the day after the rule came out. Episode 29 is a bit of a deeper dive based on some initial experience. What are people misunderstanding? What is out there that might be leading people astray and really could have dire consequences for people if they continue with those misunderstandings or misperceptions? So highly recommend that people go back to that.
One of the themes that came up in the discussions at the conference today was communication internally. There is a sense where trade compliance folks within companies need to be educating their colleagues across the enterprise, wherever they're at. Part of that is those misperceptions that may be out there. That's what we talked about in our last podcast, episode number 29.
The topic of today's podcast, Brent, is really external communications. There have been a few articles in the news we wanted to comment on over the past several weeks, and those are bleeding into interest from the U.S. Congress. We have some thoughts to share about how to think about what should you say as a company when you're asked for comment to some of these stories. You may disagree with the facts that the reporters are presenting, but what you will say has consequences both in the public and with enforcement authorities. Then we'll talk about congressional hearings. It's a topic we've covered a few times already, once with the NYU program on corporate compliance and enforcement blog, once in an earlier podcast episode, but it's worth revisiting given the signs that are coming out of Congress.
Yeah, one committee in the House just wrapped up an investigation and issued its report. There are signals out there that more congressional hearings are on the way. These need to be carefully thought through and approached because statements that are made in the course of those inquiries can come back and bite you. We see it in responses to media inquiries, and we see it in statements in these congressional inquiries where companies will say, we are in full compliance with U.S. export controls, or something along those lines. We have been in compliance. We've always been in compliance. Well, what's the danger with those statements, Mike?
It's totally understandable why those statements come out, right? This is something that obviously companies are thoughtful about. We're not at all thinking that people are thoughtless or reckless in making these statements. They're usually issued by official company spokespersons for good reason for publicly traded companies. So it's understandable to say that. Now, what we want to point out is that when you make that statement, you invite a reaction and you invite potentially questions from regulators. So on the first part, thinking about the type of reaction you might invite from the public, it's helpful to think about the context in which this statement will appear. Now, nobody should be doing tabloid compliance, right? You don't have to accept facts that are reported as true, and many times they're not. There could be competitors, disgruntled employees, there could be international actors, geopolitical actors trying to plant stories and things like that. But there's a risk that if you say something that looks like your lawyer wrote it, that's why I'm happy to have Brent here with me, it's going to be viewed maybe with a grain of salt, to put it politely, from the public, especially when it comes in this context of reported facts indicating diversion, a lot of facts that with hindsight, and particularly given the way the story might be written or the way the facts might be framed, looks a bit silly or just not even really responsive. If you're talking about a diversion scheme and the investigative journalist has uncovered really ridiculous facts about the actual end user or the nature of the company that's listed as, say, the ultimate consignee on the form, like we saw in the Los Angeles case, Brent, from a few months ago, where the underlying documents showed ostensibly that the shipment was to an e-cigarette company with some ties to the tech industry in a country which, if it had been noted as the ultimate destination, would have triggered a license requirement. There's nothing in that report that suggests the company that shipped those particular products knew that that was the ultimate end use. But when this whole thing is framed in that type of context, simple statements that we comply with the law could raise cynicism or skepticism about the sincerity of the statement, or it delegitimizes the law, which also might be part of the smuggler's intentions, right? They would much rather have the export controls get watered down because people think they aren't being effective than not. In that context, there's going to be an urge to say something. There's going to be pressure to say something from the board, from the C-suite. No one wants to leave allegations like that unresponded to.
One thing to just to recognize and reiterate is that we're in an era of high probability compliance and enforcement. And we've talked about that on other podcasts. We've written about it. We have our articles in the World ECR and Dow Jones Risk Journal magazines. That's important to understand where that's at, and important to understand the signals that are coming from the government, from the Bureau of Industry and Security on this. To come out and say we are in full compliance with export controls, while at the same time there may be facts out there showing that there are red flags around these deals. A statement like that is going to be a lightning rod where BIS enforcement officials and Congress come back and they're going to say, what exactly do you mean? That could come back and bite the company and bite the people in it.
Brent, given that we've pointed out the problem, we owe it to people to offer at least a framework for coming up with a solution. What are some ways then to avoid that type of situation when you're responding to a media report like that?
Think about compliance is never a one and done sort of situation. It's always an evolving process. You work based on what knowledge you have at any given point in time, and you work with those facts. So when you're in a situation where you may be under investigation or the focus of media scrutiny, it's better to say something along the lines where, well, we take export controls very seriously. We look to comply with them as best we can. We understand that the situation is evolving and we are getting our arms around the facts of the matter. It's about saying things that are not going to come back and bite you. Understanding where it's an evolving situation.
Look, you may not want to commit to the public writ large that you're going to continue to update the news reporter with what you find. But Brent, a helpful construct that you raised there was some kind of acknowledgement, say, look, we know export control compliance is risk-based. We have a risk-based compliance program that we're continually updating. We're taking on board these allegations and evaluating them.
That's an important distinction, too, to also say that we're taking a risk-based approach to the compliance program. Because, again, compliance evolves. The risks evolve. It's important to understand that's an evolving situation where, as we look at things, and you prioritize that risk, there may be certain red flags that could be there. And sometimes they could be missed.
Right. Or sometimes they maybe weren't known to you. And you are learning at least allegations or alleged facts in the news. Unless you had already done due diligence and you can see where the investigative journalist was maybe walking down a path that you did as well in your own due diligence proactively when you onboarded the particular customer, and you know that they're chasing a false positive. That's something where you might be able to lean into it a little bit more. Now, Brent, people might hear this and say, well, guys, you just gave me like a paragraph answer. It's a lot cooler, crisper, more direct to say we comply with the law. Well, when the public hears a big corporation say we comply with the law in the face of all these allegations, they're going to think you're relying on loopholes or technicalities. And frankly, those loopholes or technicalities might not exist.
One other thing about loopholes to keep in mind is beware of taking legal advice from media reports. Several of these media reports include statements by often anonymous legal experts. There's some technicality or loophole that allows, for example, in some of the recent reporting, for entity shifting, essentially diverting sales, taking some of the other facts alleged in the media report to be true that would have gone to a parent entity, but instead are sold to a, let's say, even a U.S. subsidiary of a listed entity as if that's some kind of clever workaround. Well, clearly, that's not the national security objectives of the United States. As we've said before, evasion and diversion could start close to home with the recent arrest of two individuals in Los Angeles, not that long long ago for diverting products that ostensibly were purchased by a U.S. company but carried a lot of red flags, certainly according to the arrest affidavit that was used to justify their detention. When you see anonymous legal experts cited, it's not legal advice. It's not you asking for legal advice. There's no confidentiality around what people say to the press, anonymously or with attribution. And they may not be thinking of all the facts. My own personal view, Brent, is they certainly aren't thinking of the other aspects of the Export Administration regulations.
One thing we've said for a while is that the entity list is but one part of the AAR. And so it hasn't changed now and didn't change before, was that the rest of the EAR, the U.S. Export Administration regulations, still applied. So General Prohibition 10 on supporting in any way, including financing, a transaction where you are aware of, defined to include a high probability awareness, not just actual knowledge, of a past, present, or future violation of the U.S. export controls. The other catch-all provisions, so what is the end use and who is the end user of these tools, and the provisions that we refer to in the white-collar world as inchoate provisions, meaning not fully formed offenses, although they are offenses in and of themselves. Things like aiding, abetting, conspiracy, misrepresentation, evasion, acting with knowledge of another person's violation. These are all things that are sitting there and have been sitting there for some time. It would be a mistake just to focus on that one area.
We also have to keep in mind that people who disagree with U.S. export controls may have an interest in making them sound silly or sound ineffective, and they may be seeking to influence the public policy debate by making them look silly or ridiculous or just to be paper rules, when in fact they're far, far from that.
The other reason not to go for the preference maybe of your PR advisors or your investor relations people is that the other audience, anytime there's a media report, is the government. When you say something like, we comply with all export control laws, they might come to you and say, hey, look, we read the news too. We saw this article. Great to hear that you comply with all laws. How have you incorporated our recent guidance? Whether it's because maybe there's an allegation that the new affiliates rule was in play. Maybe there's an allegation that, oh, maybe there are red flags, like you mentioned, Brent, that government might say, well, isn't this going to put you on a high probability awareness, even going back to what you knew about the customer when they ordered the items or whatever it might be? What did you really think about their bona fides? You know, not just from a creditworthiness perspective or whether they had cash on hand, but what they were going to do with the chips and where they might send them. If you're going to make that statement, or if you want to be able to make that statement going forward, and your compliance program for export controls has not yet expressly acknowledged the high probability enforcement guidance, the recent cases where there were 140 million in penalties strictly on a high probability awareness theory, then you want to make sure you get your ducks in a row internally in anticipation of the question your statement is going to invite from BIS.
Right, absolutely. It comes down to what we've talked about before, developing and implementing that high probability protocol through the compliance program. Part of that protocol is not only incorporating that full definition of knowledge under the Export Administration regulations, but then also have procedural tips too as well. Then you can say the right things and you can communicate that without making a statement that, quite frankly, would just be a lightning rod for further questions from the government.
Brent, the other things that could also determine that scope of what you could safely say are your original due diligence, so that specific part of the compliance program, which I think is worth highlighting. Were you doing risk-based due diligence? But also, maybe in response to the media report, or maybe you got an internal report beforehand, which might also then lead you to think that maybe a whistleblower might be one of the sources for the journalist. What did you do in response to either that internal report or to the external media report? What kind of investigation did you do in response to that? Where do you have the opportunity to respond to internal allegations, anonymous or otherwise, about particular diversion or smuggling schemes, keep in mind when you're scoping that and you're evaluating, is this substantiated? Do we proceed to a more formal investigation after maybe taking an informal look? That is going to determine also your ability then to speak to the public or speak to the government about what you think about those allegations. If you dismiss something out of hand and then it becomes the issue of a significant media report, before you overassert yourself in responding publicly, you might want to look back at either your due diligence or, if you had that opportunity, internal investigation. And is there something in the media report you want to be able to say you have taken into account? Then go do that.
It's risk-based and focused. There should never be a reason to look under every rock. Everything should be risk-based and focused.
And that's where the high probability standard can be your friend, because you don't have to zero risk every situation. You don't have to exhaust the universe of risks, but you do need to document your path, your decision-making about what risks you identified and how you mitigate them. There's a lot of media coverage recently about exports for crime control purposes and whether those complied with U.S. rules that have been in existence for several decades and that continue to apply. There's already been one Associated Press article on that topic. We wouldn't be surprised if there are a series of articles on this, because that article has gotten attention in the U.S. Congress. This is a good transition, Brent, to the same concepts but applied to U.S. congressional hearings. Senator Josh Hawley has focused on the recent Associated Press reporting and asserted that there will be a request for information, and I think we're right to assume likely hearings on this topic. He has signed in the past letters with Senator Elizabeth Warren demanding certain actions from the Commerce Department, including S2 enforcement. So this is a bipartisan theme, a bipartisan trend. We saw last year trade compliance professionals in September of 2024 being dragged in front of the Senate, having to testify under oath on camera.
Mike, in terms of making those statements before Congress, it comes down to preparing in advance and preparing in the right way and understanding where Congress is going with this, what they're going to be pressing on, and looking at what are the signals now that we see. Even in that latest report from that House committee, one of the recommendations for BIS is to leverage the high probability standard, leverage that full definition of knowledge in its enforcement actions. That's a clear signal. When the next company's batch of companies get called before Congress and have to testify again under oath, it's important that those statements have to be factually correct. And then also understanding the information that's gathered as part of those congressional hearings, it's not like it goes into a vault like at the end of Indiana Jones and the Raiders of the Lost Ark, right next to the alien bodies. No, that's handed over to the enforcement officials to go deal with. The stuff doesn't just go away. It can be out there smoldering for a while. It really comes back to, have we implemented a high probability protocol in our compliance program where we are leveraging the full definition of knowledge to protect ourselves? Just as the government's going to be leveraging that in enforcement actions, companies can do that and leverage that full definition of knowledge to protect themselves, their people, and their compliance programs.
Absolutely, Brent. For those who aren't following closely, there was a report issued last week focusing on SME, semiconductor manufacturing equipment toolmakers. The House Select Committee on the Chinese Communist Party focused on five companies, U.S. and foreign, and to what extent there may have been sales to then listed, meaning on the entity list at the time of the sale, companies in China, and future listed companies, with a suggestion by the committee that that was entity shifting. In particular, that report, and why we bring it up in the context of these media reports, includes a footnote at the back, footnote 5, that all the corporations named in this report told the committee staff that they were in full compliance with U.S. export controls or had a compliance program sufficient to reasonably ensure compliance with those export control laws. That last part has a little bit of maybe wiggle room in it for whether they were asserting that they were always fully compliant or not. The committee went out of its way multiple times in the report to say that it was not making a legal determination as to intent, as to any violations of law, but they did make factual determinations that clearly do carry enforcement risk. And certainly, given the pressure that Congress has been putting on BIS, given the recent laws that have been enacted where Congress is demanding more information from BIS, it would be very unusual if this report didn't prompt, if it hasn't already prompted, outreach from BIS. Again, on those lines, great, you tell us you're in compliance. Tell us how, show us how, and show us how you are not only dealing with what you might actually be aware of, but how are you dealing with high probability risk? One thing that I think is also worth stressing, there are very valid public policy debates that you can have about how the United States or how other countries are interpreting their own national security concerns and how they are responding to them. The challenge is there's no defense under the export controls where you don't agree to the national security predicates that are offered. Or maybe you don't even agree with just the assertion of national security. Maybe there's not a whole lot of explanation around it. What is a negotiation tactic? What is the actual end result that the United States is hoping to achieve? And how will they justify that actual end result? If you're dealing with questions from the C-suite, from the board, where they're saying, well, we don't really agree with this. We're going to just lose market share to companies in other countries because of these laws. That all may be correct, but that's not a defense to the export controls. That may be a reason you engage your government affairs team or your executives to go to Washington and try to get the government to change its view. But it's not for any of us unilaterally in the moment of a transaction to just discount the regulations because we don't agree with the stated policy purpose.
Whatever opinion you have on whatever policy is driving these particular export controls, put that aside when you're actually thinking about compliance and putting in those protective backstops for this new era of high probability compliance and enforcement. Where you're thinking about the bigger picture and you look at like, okay, why is the government putting in export controls? What's driving the enforcement? What's driving the guidance? These are national security issues. This is not just a commercial dispute. You don't want to just cave in either. You want to help them and help educate them and say, okay, where can we do business? Where is it going to be an issue? And where can we come to an alignment where, as a company, we're able to engage? But at the same time, we are cognizant of those national security issues that keep being expressed by the U.S. government. Understanding the context behind all this and then the leverage, because that will give you an understanding of what you can deal with. You want to come in now as an honest broker. We had experience in the FCPA world, the Foreign Corrupt Practices Act world. It went a long way in negotiating with the government if they would recognize you as an honest broker to come in and say, look, nobody's perfect. No compliance program is perfect. Some mistakes may have been made, but here, we're here to work with you to get to this point where we can find that win-win in all this. That's really sort of the art of the deal.
It is, Brent. One way to demonstrate that honesty when you are negotiating with the government is, again, you don't have to necessarily admit or agree with their view about the purpose, your knowledge necessarily, or your intent, but be sure to frame your arguments with an acknowledgement of the reasons why a particular restriction was put in place in the first place. If your statements to them seem to have a cognitive dissonance with the reasons why the particular control was put into place, you're going to lose a lot of credibility with them. Really, maybe the bottom line to all this, Brent, is if you want to have maximum flexibility in what you are able to say publicly in response to media or in response to the government, you want to have an effective compliance program that you can get behind, that shows awareness of and reaction to the latest trends. The more that your compliance program is really up to speed with the latest guidance, in particular from BIS when we're talking export controls, the more liberty you have to work with your executives, investor relations, public relations, and really give your spokespeople the most options to choose from. You don't want to have them go out there and overstate from the government's perspective where your compliance program might be. Obviously, it's a thin line to walk, and you don't want to also admit to issues with the compliance program either, but it's important to make sure that this is part of the dialogue in responding to some of these reports. We have every reason to believe there's going to be increased and continuing geopolitical tensions. There's going to be increased pressures and financial pressures for smuggling, not just because of export controls, because of tariffs and other economic security measures that many countries are taking unilaterally. That's going to lead to investigative journalism reports continuing about those events. That brings us to managing up for this episode, backed by ever-increasing popular demand. Brent, what's your managing up for today?
Yeah, Mike, just as the old saying goes, look before you leap, let's think before we speak. Words matter. And statements can come back to bite us, bite the company, bite the officers and directors. Think about that very carefully before we make them. We've offered the roadmap here in terms of how to approach that in an effective and constructive manner, especially as this whole new era of the high probability enforcement and compliance world keeps moving forward. There's a whole lot more to come. The issues are not going to go away. It's something where we all have to keep evolving and rolling along with it.
As always, Brent, well said. We saw a lot of very sincere, very well-meaning, really hardworking people at the conference today. Again, highly recommend it to anybody next year. Shout out to the organizers who did an excellent job.
It was a sellout. This is going to be something that's going to be increasing in terms of attendance and interest going forward. Many thanks to the organizers out there and to everybody who attended. It was great to see folks out there today.